This podcast is sponsored by Smartsheet, the cloud-based work management platform and best-kept secret of more than half the Fortune 500 companies. Learn more at smartsheet.com/crosscuttingconcerns.
How the app get made, explain your trade, what you love to do every day, the ins and out of what your code's about, or the passion you know you can't live without. How's your data stored or sorted, transformed or imported? Let's chat a bit at a conference, and if it's cool, may re-record it. What framework do you like the best? Explain to us your unit test. Do you have a tip for JavaScript or a dev kit that we can tinker with? A process, a methodology, in depth, no apologies. Step up your code, stay on your toes, cross-cutting concerns. With Matt Groves.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment.
On your toes, Crosscutting Concern with Matt Groves.
I'm recording this podcast on September 5th, 2018. My guest today is an ETL developer with over 10 years of IT experience. Joe Kelly, how are you?
Outstanding, but improving. Thank you.
That's great to hear. Thanks for being on the show. Recently, I was talking with Eric Potter about old and legacy software. I put those in quotes. And I thought it would be valuable to reach out to those parts of the software world that aren't necessarily bleeding edge. New version every 2 hours, you know, the shiny new JavaScript framework. So I put out a call to talk to people who are still writing COBOL, Fortran, even Visual Basic or ASP Classic. Joe contacted me saying that he programmed COBOL for 6 years until 2015 and is considering actually going back into COBOL. So, Joe, why on earth would you go back to COBOL?
I do have that 6 years of COBOL experience, but I don't have any .NET experience or Java experience. And so when people send me a job request, they say, hey, we need to have some experience in .NET or Java, and I don't have that. But with my 5-6 years at COBOL, people have approached me and said, hey, would you be interested in leveraging those skills again? Right now, I'm an ETL developer using Alteryx. I've done that for a couple of years. But ironically, there are more job postings for COBOL than Alteryx as of today, if you look on Indeed or something like that. I'm pretty happy with ETL, but I find that COBOL is a lot more challenging and interesting, and maybe it pays better.
You mentioned ETL there, and I'm assuming that means extract, transform, load?
That's right. When I say ETL, it's extract, transform, load, data warehouse type of stuff. And I've done Alteryx and SAP Business Object Data Services.
Now, COBOL has a huge place in computer history. I think probably most developers, even if they've never written it, have at least heard of it. Could you maybe briefly talk about a little bit of the history of COBOL and what COBOL actually is?
Sure. Well, COBOL stands for the Common Business Oriented Language. C-O comes from the first letter, common. It was developed in the 50s. A lot of the credit for the development of the language goes to a woman by the name of Grace Hopper. She worked in the Navy. It was one of the earliest high-level languages. Low-level languages where you try to describe to the computer exactly how to do in a language that the computer understands. One of the problems with that approach is, first of all, it's not easy to understand how computers think. Secondly, if your company wanted to switch from one vendor to another, they would have to rewrite all of the different ways that the processor handled things, the way the memory handled things, the way the tape drive or storage device handled things. And with COBOL, that's a level of abstraction that they were able to implement, where the COBOL code is compiled down into the language that the processor understands. So if you code on an Intel machine or an IBM machine, they understand each other just exactly. And a compiler converts the English language code from COBOL into the machine level code, whether it's for, like I say, an IBM system, a Unisys system, or any system that existed between the 50s and today. COBOL has a few basic commands that are present in most languages, like conditional logic, using if statements or evaluate statements. It's able to loop through any number of records using the perform statement. Of course, you have to read and write data. You have to open and close files. What's left are the manipulation of the data, and that's pretty simple. You can move data from one field to another, or you can compute things using either the compute statement, which makes things look like a formula, or more English language manipulations of add, subtract, multiply, or divide. Those have their own syntax. And of course, COBOL can call a different program as well. Data types are another thing in COBOL, and those are pretty simple. It's either alphanumeric or it's a number. There's a little bit more to it than that, but that's a pretty decent overview of how COBOL works.
Some of your comments there about COBOL being a common language that can run on any processor, that seems like not a big deal these days, but back then it was absolutely a huge deal in terms of productivity and as you said, like vendor lock-in and chip lock-in and stuff.
Exactly.
One of the things that I think it's notorious for is the Y2K bugs. Based on the years of your experience, you probably didn't have to deal with these directly, but are there any lasting effects from Y2K that are still evident in COBOL today?
Well, I did not, of course, program in the year 2000. I was still in high school, but there are some things that we still do in COBOL a little differently now because of Y2K. Dates were never a different data type. Like I say, there was alphanumeric or numeric. And in languages like Java and Python and SQL, it's a specific data type is a date. And the way the computer stores that internally in those date data types is as an integer since a certain day. And then it computes and converts that into whatever format you want to see it in. Whether you want to be British and have the days and months reversed compared to folks in America, then go ahead and do that. But with COBOL, no one defined that. So some people would say year, month, day, and we're using a two-digit year. So you have 6 bytes to work with. With the limitation of the file format, you miss some data. With 6 bytes, you can do a lot, though. You can use a compressed field called a comp3. Some implementations actually store the year as the number of years since, say, 1800, and then they store the day as the number of days since January 1st. In that sense, they can get by with maybe 4 or 5 bytes of data storing it, depending on how well they compress it. With this implementation, you may run into a situation where you're 1,000 years beyond 1800, and it will be a year 2800 bug. And there's all sorts of these little date bugs because there's no unlimited way of storing the date. I was working on one program and a guy implemented something in assembler. I was like, you know what? This is going to crap out on us in 200 years. And they were like, well, whatever. I was like, didn't we just have Y2K? And apparently that was not an issue that they cared about at that point. But with this implementation where they have a 3-digit day as opposed to a 4-digit year month, the limitation of that is that you can't tell whether day 60 is February 29 or March 1st. And that causes all sorts of issues because you can't tell what month it is even at that point or whether it's a leap year.
The whole original reason for this limitation is to save space, right? Because it used to be that storage and memory were very, very expensive and very limited.
If you can get by with fewer bytes, of course, do it because it is memory and processing both. Those are no longer big considerations in it. More mature places that I've worked at, they just store date as 8 full bytes. None of this 5-byte, 4-byte weird compression. But if you did have a system that was limited by saying our file length is 500 bytes and that has everything on it, then you couldn't really easily change that copybook or file format. So you had to get by with these weird compression things of working something that's 6 bytes or less into the date field, if that's what you started with.
Based on the widespread news that Y2K made, it seems like COBOL was being used a lot of places. I'm guessing that's probably fewer places now, but it's still being used in a lot of places. So what is COBOL being used for and why?
That is true. When there was that Y2K hubbub, some forward-looking companies said, you know what, 1995, we got to replace the system or do a big upgrade to it in about 5 years. Let's actually switch to SAP, or let's switch to SQL-based database environment that doesn't have these issues. So they went ahead and replaced their COBOL system. But the folks that stayed on COBOL did so because they had 30 years of code written in COBOL. Replacing it was not feasible. The industries that latched onto COBOL at first were those that thought that automation was going to really help them, like insurance companies, the federal government, banks, eventually credit card companies. A lot of different industries use COBOL and continue to use it because there's a huge cost of switching away from it and trying to replicate all that you've done in 30, 40, 50, however many years of code, baked into thousands of lines of code. Just simply replacing it is not always feasible. And another thing is that the the way that COBOL does math is slightly different than the way that modern languages do. Modern languages usually represent stuff using a floating point arithmetic, whereas COBOL kind of doesn't understand that unless you use a count 4, 5, which is rare in my experience. Instead, it uses an implied decimal. So everything is essentially an integer, just with a decimal place implied. So let me give you an example. If something costs $3.16, in COBOL, that would just be 316. And your data type, you would say, pick 9, 15, or 15 spaces before the decimal place, and then you have a V for the implied decimal, and 99 for the two decimal points after that.
You've been using COBOL for a while. You've had some experience with it. What is the thing you like the most about COBOL as a language?
You know what's great is that you don't have to learn anything new. The code that I used was implementing the COBOL 1985 spec, also called COBOL 2. And there's been some specifications beyond that. I know recently, somewhat recently, 2002, there was an effort to make COBOL object-oriented. It added one or two new features, and we had no desire at this implementation to use those features. And recompiling every single program that we had in COBOL and testing every single thing in order to switch to the new compiler was a huge cost for us. So we're still using the COBOL 1985 spec. And I know that some places are still using the COBOL 74 spec. So you don't have to learn anything new. It's also challenging. Like I say, with a similar code, you're trying to speak exactly the language of the computer. With COBOL, you're trying to speak this made-up language that's got its own limitations. And with some of the newer languages, they've made additional abstractions that make things a little bit easier. Python, for instance, is taught to entry-level students in college. COBOL, maybe because of its lack of popularity, is not. But it's, I think, also more difficult.
I think when I was going to college, there were still some COBOL courses, and this was turn of the millennia. What's the experience like as a COBOL programmer? As a Microsoft developer, we have like Visual Studio, and we've got compilers and, you know, command line tools and a wide variety of editors and all these sorts of things. What sort of tools do you use to write COBOL with?
To start off with is that this was well before the Macintosh. You've got essentially something that looks like DOS. It's all character-based. With those character-based screens, they try to emulate a 3270 terminal that IBM made many, many years ago, and that had 80 characters wide. That's because COBOL originally was programmed on punch cards. They had 80 characters to work with. That's what you have to work with in mainframe speak. There are some nice things that you can do in an editor inside of COBOL. On the ZOS, that's the IBM system, you can do a vertical copy-paste, which is not even implemented in most word processors. You can copy and paste multiple lines of code. There's a command prompt. You actually get to use those F keys on your keyboard. You got 12 of them, and they actually do different things, and you had to know which one did what. So if you typed find something on your command line and you wanted to do find again, you wouldn't type the command find something. You would just hit F5 over and over and go through your code, and like F2 did then else. There are special programs on the mainframe to support your programming environment. There's a compiler, of course, debugging tools that are made by either IBM or CompuWare, or sometimes some places don't have debuggers and they just use a bunch of display statements. Which I can get, I'm sure, out of control pretty quick. There are some special programs to compare between two files. You get to specify that this data is in one format and this is in another format, and columns 1 through 5 are this field. And well, that field got moved over to, 100 through 105. And then you compare those two different fields by saying that they should be equal. So there's a whole number of utilities in software companies that develop things for the mainframe. One tool that I used for the mainframe was just to compare that your input data equaled your output data, in terms of like you took in $1 million of revenue and you output it into 5 different files that adds up to $1 million. That is a whole special program that is implemented on the mainframe.
What is the COBOL community like? Talking about things like conferences and meetups and even open source projects. Do those things exist? What form do they take?
So I live in Lansing, and there's a pretty healthy COBOL community in terms of we've got a lot of developers, but there's no meetup group in Lansing. There's none that I've ever seen that people say, hey, let's get together and talk about the mainframe. I guess one time I saw some people get together about like hacking a mainframe, which is a whole different thing that I don't do. There are like way more regular meetings for like agile groups or .SQL or .NET or whatever. There's not really a lot to talk about with COBOL because, you know, like I say, the standard hasn't changed in years. Sometimes you go to a SQL Server meeting and they're like, hey, you know, come out in the next version, there's going to be this new thing that you can do. That's not really something that is happening in the COBOL world. In terms of open source efforts, there is an open source program called OpenCOBOL. You can use that to compile your programs on your PC or, I guess, whatever platform it runs on. That's open source. I use it a couple of times. It's decent. It, of course, doesn't have all the other supporting software like the debugger or file compare tools that you can get on the mainframe, and it doesn't have necessarily the speed of running it on a mainframe computer.
It's kind of a shame about the meetups because I feel like, yeah, a lot of the meetups that I go to often focus on the new version or some new technology, a new library, but that often means we talk about those at the expense of things like, you know, problem solving and use cases. And that stuff can be applied to any technology, I believe. You know, our shared experiences and how we solved a problem. And I wish we'd see more of that at meetups in general. And I think that would be a great thing for COBOL developers to meet and discuss.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, with COBOL, there's not a whole lot to do in terms of problem solving. You can either move something or you can compute something, and that's all you're limited to. So there are different ways of implementing code. I know one thing I did early on was kind of the wrong way to do things. I made a file really long instead of making it have multiple records in it. There's different things that you can do in COBOL, but I'm not sure if there's a whole lot to talk about, like I say.
You know, it's kind of sounding more attractive to me, honestly, because we're about to play a game here where I give you the names of JavaScript libraries, and this JavaScript stuff is changing constantly. And so it would be nice to maybe kind of like every once in a while when I'm mad at the computer, I think about, oh, I'm just going to go become Amish. This is the equivalent, I guess, of I'm going to drop all this modern JavaScript stuff and go work in COBOL for a while. So, speaking of which, it's time to play that game that's sweeping the nation.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for your favorite game from Cross-Cutting Concerns, where the question is it a JavaScript framework or something we just made up? Now, here's your host, Matt Grove.
Thank you, Joe Ferg. Now, as you might know, Joe, they give JavaScript libraries awfully funny names these days. So in this game, I'm going to list three names of JavaScript libraries. And your job is to tell me which ones you think are real and which ones you think are fake. Real means they're listed on npmjs.com at the time of this recording. And to keep things interesting, if you get all three correct, you're going to win a $5 gift card. So I know you have some COBOL experience, some ETL experience. Do you have any JavaScript experience?
I don't.
Well, here's some good news for you, Joe. Is that people who don't have JavaScript experience on the show tend to win the game more often than those who do.
Okay, sounds good.
So here are the names of the libraries. I'll list them all, and then you can tell me what you think. The first one is node.cobol. The second one is cobol-mainframe. And the third one is green screen. All one word, green screen. Do you need to hear those again?
I think, geez. So I guess from the sound of it, maybe one of these is right. Maybe this is, one of these is wrong. I don't know. I think that green screen, of course, is related to the mainframe. I would think if I was calling something COBOL related, I might call it. I know Node is a big thing. Jeez, yeah. This is a hard one. I'm gonna say that number three, green screen, is true, and the other two are false.
Okay, so just to recap, you think node.cobol is made up, you think COBOL-mainframe is made up, and you think green screen is real. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Ah, I'm sorry, Joe. You're not quite right. So Node.COBOL is a real thing that exists. It is a COBOL bridge between COBOL applications and Node.
Great.
COBOL-mainframe is just one I made up. It sounded like it could be real, so I just put that one in there.
Mm-hmm.
And green screen's real. It is not related to mainframes, but it is for, it's a Chromecast signage library. But the name sounded pretty interesting. So sorry you didn't get it right, but thank you very much for playing.
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways that COBOL is related to different technologies. And I know that behind the screens, COBOL can be running even though you're interfacing with a website. So it doesn't surprise me that JavaScript has some hooks in there that it can interact with COBOL.
Are there any resources you recommend for listeners who want to learn more about COBOL?
Go ahead and search for Sam's Teach Yourself COBOL in 24 Hours. That's what I use to get my start. I know that the book written maybe a while ago, and it comes with a CD with a COBOL compiler. It works with like Windows 3.1 or something crazy.
Oh boy.
So I'd recommend that you do the exercise in Open COBOL, which runs on your computer nowadays. There are some more in-depth books that you can get into later once you land a job, but reading a book like that should get you enough to get an interview. There's a website called ibmmainframes.com. It's like a bulletin board, and if you have any like specific questions about mainframes, then it's likely that it's been asked and answered there. That's what I'd recommend.
Is there anything else you'd like to promote as we wrap up the show?
Just to hope everybody votes this November, whoever they want to vote for. But if you want to contact me or anybody does, it's joewkelly@gmail.com. No spaces or anything. I am on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @joey2ties, T-W-O.
My guest today has been Joe Kelly. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great one.
This has been the Crosscutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2018. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this episode was made possible in part by Microsoft.
This week's podcast is brought to you by Smartsheet. Are your projects pulled off like Band-Aids? You need Smartsheet. No more pain, just simple, collaborative work management in the cloud from a beautiful UI. Learn more at smartsheet.com/crosscuttingconcerns.
It was recorded and mixed with the help of Camtasia Recorder, Skype, and Audacity. Music is by Joe Ferg. Check out joeferg.com, JOEFERG, to listen to more great music. Stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes, step up your cold, stay on your toes. Cross-cutting concern with Matt Groves.